It's time again for the Oklahoma Today podcast. This week, we are delighted to bring you an interview with Linda Ford and Lisa Beckland of Living Kitchen Farm and Dairy in Depew and Farm Bar in Tulsa. But before we get into that, it's time for our very topical question of the week. Which veggie did you hate as a child and now love as an adult? First up, Editor-in-Chief Nathan Gunner.
I'm going to say the thing that I think is probably the number one answer, which is Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
Hated them. Hated them. Hated them. Did not want to eat them. But also, and this comes up in our conversation later with the women of Farm Bar and Living Kitchen, but we were also, our generation was raised in the era of the fast vegetable more than the fresh vegetable. Mm-hmm. So I feel like a lot of people our age had a lot of things in cans that maybe didn't need to be in cans. So I understand anyone from our generation not really liking vegetables, but I think it's time to get over it because there's a lot of good ones out there.
I agree. Managing Editor Carly Ibarra.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the can thing. I think every vegetable we had came either from a can or a steamable bag once mm-hmm. those came out. And I think the worst were peas and carrots. Oh. They just really absorbed the tinny flavor of the can mm-hmm. and they're so mushy. And it's yeah. just like I thought I hated peas until I was old enough to buy my own food. And then I made peas myself, like fresh. And I was like, oh my gosh, this doesn't even taste like the same thing.
Really?
So, yeah.
See, peas
for me are one of the ones that I still don't like.
Yeah.
I like peas.
Them as long as it's not from a can.
Okay.
I'm good. Yeah.
Last time I ate peas, I actually vomited.
Canned carrots for me. Mm-hmm. My mom didn't believe me that they would make me like literally throw up until I did. And she was
That was my story too. I ate some canned peas and she was like, you did that on purpose. And I was like, no, the taste literally made me barf.
So you weren't in The Exorcist?
No.
Okay. Just checking. What about you, Greg?
Oh, well, yeah, let's see. I hated cauliflower.
Oh, yeah.
That was the one that, like, even raw, like, yeah. with lots of ranch dressing to dip it in, I was mm-hmm. like, well, this tastes sort of like I'm eating not solid plastic. But, you know, now it's like there's much like Carly said, there's a lot of stuff that I think it's about the preparation.
Yeah.
Some of it
yeah.
is the freshness of the vegetable.
Totally.
And definitely whenever they package peas and carrots together, mm-hmm. that is an immediate no for me that it's those things should not be stored together.
Yeah. Agree.
But, you know, like cauliflower is one of those that when you start like roasting it or mm-hmm. you can steam it and puree it and mix it in with potatoes for like a lighter version of it. There's
just,
so many things you can do with
it. Or just replace the potatoes with mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, there's
a lot
of stuff.
It's a really versatile vegetable.
Yeah. Well,
what did our friends online say?
Oh, boy. Well, so many people said Brussels sprouts.
It's an easy one.
It is.
Like they were so terrible and now they're so good.
Well, when all anybody ever did with them when we were kids was boil them.
Microwave with butter. That was kind of our thing, which is fun. Like, it was, yeah, they're just so much better roasted.
So, yes. Yeah. There's...
Because then you get the jerky, right? Those outer leaves that burn, and it's...
Mm-hmm. That's the best part.
I like to... I will slice mine really thin and then break up the leaves and then saute them in, like, bacon grease and throw in some other veggies. And then just a little drizzle of maple syrup at the end. Makes for a really amazing side dish.
Good idea.
Our art buddy, Jerry Bennett, says he's pretty shocked at his recent love affair with eggplant.
Okay.
And Fran Jones said her foes turned friends are carrots. Michelle Cheney said she's come around on onions, while a lot of folks are rethinking their past hatred of broccoli, including our friend Jesse Sloan, who said he's now eating it several times a week.
And Jesse has gotten an amazing shape over the last couple
years.
Yes, let's all listen to Jesse and eat our broccoli.
Here's one that very well could have made my list as well. Spinach.
Yeah, that's mine that I like now.
Mark Adam Goff hated spinach. spinach and again, like there's a canned spinach is
it's just not okay.
You just it's like what should we put in this can? I don't know, a bunch of leaves and water. Mary Ellen Thompson Cromwell used to hate pickled beets. My dad still does. That's one that he will rail against. And Linda Hall has come around on sweet potatoes.
Oh.
Clint Stone is with me on cauliflower. And then there are folks like Onita Cushman who said she still doesn't eat the vegetables she hated when she was a kid.
You know, some people, it's just it's a bridge too far.
That's right. All
I
right.
can understand.
Well, let's talk to our friends Lisa Beckland and Linda Ford at Living Kitchen. And now we are very happy to welcome in two of our favorite friends from the Living Kitchen Farm and Dairy in Depew and Farm Bar in Tulsa, Linda Ford and Lisa Beckland. How's it going, guys?
We're great. Excellent.
Thank you so much for joining us. We had, I assume a lot of our readers and listeners know you guys already, but most recently we were very happy to have you in our food issue in the story that I wrote about tasting menu restaurants. Tell us a little bit for people though who haven't been to Living Kitchen or haven't been to Farm Bar, what can they kind of expect or what can they not expect?
Shall I? Okay, cool. Well, Farm Bar and Living Kitchen are two very different experiences. But the thing that kind of threads them together is the use of Oklahoma raised foods. So that would be meats, grains, vegetables, of course. Anything that grows in Oklahoma and is edible is generally on the menu. That's our focus. It's our discipline. And we really don't veer from that other than getting like rice from southern Missouri and a few other grains from like maybe Texas. But we keep it hyper local and hyper regional. So that's the commonality of both places. The difference really is that the farm is a very much a community dining experience. It happens at usually at 6:30, we do a farm tour. At 7 o'clock, we all sit down at a big long table on the back porch of a log cabin and enjoy a multi-course dinner. And then Farm Bar is a little more of a traditional style restaurant where we take reservations for multiple time slots. It's an urban environment, so you know you're not going to meet the goats there.
weird day in Tulsa if you meet the goats.
Yeah. This is true. Luckily, they haven't wandered that far. Yeah. So in a nutshell, that's sort of what it's like.
Well, and Linda was telling us that today's a pretty busy day. You guys, this is even though you guys aren't doing dinners at the farm right now, this is part of the busy season because you all are doing the planning and the planting.
Yeah, actually, our growing season is this is our 13th growing season here at the farm. And yeah, we are starting getting our potato beds ready and our boxes that we grow our heirloom vegetables in ready. So we just got like 2 huge dump truck loads of mushroom compost delivered yesterday. And then, of course, cleaning out barns and getting that spread over the field. And yeah, we're starting our seeds tomorrow. Actually, it's already time to start like cabbage and cauliflower and things like that. So yeah, it's like, what the heck? and I'm right on time, you know, actually, which is amazing because I'm usually like several weeks behind. But yeah, so it's going.
That's awesome. So you said, you know, you said so much of your focus is on hyper local, and that also implies and creates a menu that's hyper seasonal.
Oh yeah, well. Absolutely.
So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, it's our menu changes. It could sometimes change every day. You know, we have kind of a outline of how we want to structure our menu. And then what we end up doing is sort of switching out as things become available. Like, you know, lettuce, sometimes if we do it right, you know, we can have like a beautiful head of butter lettuce run for like 3 weeks. But there might be a moment where there's like an in-between week where one succession isn't ready yet. And so that just has to come off the menu. We can't just go buy butter lettuce at the grocery store, you know? So it's made me really like, I have to be totally on the ball when it comes to our menus and just being able to flip on a dime, you know, if we run out of carrots or we're done with beets, then, you know, we flip it, you know, we just do something else in its place. And I think that I'm very used to it because I've been doing it for, you know, quite a lot of years. But getting my staff on board with that, because they come from more traditional style restaurants where you might change your menu every 3 to 4 months if you are a seasonal restaurant, but sometimes you have menu items that stay on there for eternity, you know, that, you know, there would be like a riot at a restaurant took like something off that you like. But so here, we're constantly in motion. Our minds are constantly in motion. We're constantly looking ahead at what is going to be ready in a week, 2 weeks, 7 days, 6 days, 2 days, tomorrow morning. And so, it's why my memory is shot, because it's all being used up for those kind of purposes.
Yeah. How often do you just have to invent something on the fly?
kind of probably more often than I'd like to admit.
You'd never know. Honestly, you'd never know.
Yeah, it's true. And I think the term hyper seasonal is great, Nathan. I like that, because I think people around here tend to think of a seasonal menu as one that changes, you know, in the fall, the spring, the winter, the summer. And so, you know, they think coming to Farm Bar, for example, means that it'll be the same menu for 3 or 4 months because we have all the same things during that time. But they don't really understand how vegetable growing works, that even though in a given 3 or 4 month season, those vegetables may change drastically during that period of time.
It's Oklahoma.
It's Oklahoma too.
Yeah. I mean, it could be winter in May.
Right.
You know?
I think it also comes down to a really close relationship with the farmers in the area as well. Not just our own farm, but other farmers as well. And being able to work with them and what they have. And even if it's a small amount, we can take that and use it for a couple of days. But if they have a larger amount, then we can work with it for a longer period of time. So it requires the ability that, like Lisa was saying, being able to shift and change on a dime.
I feel like the diners at your restaurants really do have to kind of have a love it and leave it attitude, where it's just like you come in there and let yourself fall in love with a dish with the full understanding that you will probably never taste that again. Yes. I mean, I can't tell you there's so many things that like a week or a month later, I'll be talking with my fiance and she'll be like, "Oh, do you remember that bread?" And I'll be like, "Yes." And she's like, "Oh, why can't we get that bread again?" I go, "Well, 1,000 reasons, but you know, but that also makes it so exciting too. I think as a diner to go in there and really feel like, you know, it's like taking a vacation, you know, it's always going to be different. Every time you go, it's going to be different. Things are going to be changing around you and you just have to kind of embrace the change and lean into it. And if you do that, I feel like there's really no better restaurants in Oklahoma than Living Kitchen and Farm Bar, because you just, it's just a heart opening experience to be able to go like, I'm eating Oklahoma in this moment.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think that that comes back to like, we don't share our menu before the dinner. I mean, a lot of that has a lot to do with the fact that sometimes I don't know the menu at a time. But also, I mean, in a more like thoughtful excuse, rather, it is because I want people to be surprised. I don't want them to have a preconceived notion, a construct of what they think it's going to be like, especially if they see something that maybe they don't like, or they don't think they like beets or, you know, kidney, lamb kidney, you know, or like, I love to slip those in every once in a while, you know, because we use the whole animal, and I don't want anyone to get turned off by like one word that they're a little squeamish about, you know, and then have them like just not even come because they think like, or send us a bunch of requests like, I'm sorry, but I don't want beets. I don't want any of this. I don't want that. And, you know, leave the chicken livers off. And, you know, and it's like, that's not really, it's conceptually, it's not what we want, because we want, we're really trying to use everything. We're trying to not have waste. We're trying to honor our farmers, the people that go to all the trouble to raise the animals. And, you know, we just really want to use everything, but we understand that, you know, we have to do it in such a way where it's a surprise. And also it's a pleasant surprise. It's like, oh, this is so good. I hardly even knew this was beef tongue, or, you know, I mean, not that we use it, we do a lot of that, but we occasionally will slip it in.
Well, it's such an act of trust too, isn't it? I mean, that's what I would tell someone, especially because I, you know, I have so many friends who are kind of picky eaters and a little squeamish. And I would say, listen, don't focus on what's in it. Focus, like, try it, focus on how it tastes and the experience of it. And that's also why really I love that things don't reappear very often, because you really do have to be in the moment, right? Because so often when you're eating something, especially when it's delicious, you're like, you just eat, you know, and you don't, you don't take that moment and think and savor and kind of be there with it. And the fact that, you know, yeah, like Greg said, you may try this at Living Kitchen or Farm Bar and never try it again, you know, like you may never encounter it again. And so it's even more, it's, I think that makes such a cool reminder to yourself as a diner, as someone who's eating it, to just take a moment and really taste it and really be right there in that moment with that bite of food. It's just a very cool experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, not to say that, like, another kind of thing that Linda and I talk about a lot is like, we welcome dietary restrictions. So, you know, if someone is a vegan or they're vegetarian, it's really part of, even though it's sort of like, you know, we might have to use some products that don't come from Oklahoma, as far as like, when, I mean, we try as best we can, but occasionally we might need to slip a grain in there for like a vegan or something like that. But I mean, really it's the intersection between hospitality and inclusion. And I think that is one thing that is really dear to our hearts, is that we want to show up for everyone, no matter what we might, you know, what our own personal, you know, thoughts are, is that, you know, I think that's where the intersection meets with us, is hospitality and inclusion.
When one thing I've always wondered is, because you guys, it's, every time I look back at one of the old menus that I got at Living Kitchen, I'm always wondering, like, I guess, do you have old favorite vegetables and varieties that you go to, or are you like, I get the Burby catalog and just treat it like it is the latest novel from someone popular. I don't actually know anybody who's popular. So I just read through it so fast, and it's just like, oh, this year I want to get these like giant egg shaped golden squash or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, I have to say that probably one of my, gosh, I've got so many favorites. Well, I think one of the vegetables that I have a passion for, and it comes down to, like, I love the way they taste. I don't have growing them quite mastered, and no one in Oklahoma that I know of has grown them before, is radicchio. Mm. And different heirloom radicchio and chicories. And I started growing them, and I've done pretty good, except last year I had the deer that apparently really loves radicchio. And so that was a learning experience. So I love the vegetables that challenge me the most. I often have the most respect for them. I think that's why maybe I have this like love for beets. I mean, that's such a right. little like dumb vegetable, you know, but it has so many, there's so much, history. I have so much history with beets because I could never grow them for whatever reason. I just didn't have the soil type, and either I was overcrowding them or whatever. But one year I got it, and I grew like the biggest, juiciest, gorgeous, uniform, perfect beets. And I mean, that was like after 5 years of trying to grow them. I mean, I am no farmer. I mean, I try, and I succeed sometimes, but mostly I succeed only because of all the multiple failures that I've had. That's why like these dinners are so important financially to us. Yeah. Because, you know, I'm not skilled enough to actually make a honest living at it. You know?
It's true.
I think you're doing great, honestly. Well, and that's, you know, for people who've never visited Living Kitchen, I know one of the things that I really enjoyed and appreciated as someone who grew up with a garden and tries to be a gardener now. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think, right. Trust me, you don't know incompetence in a garden in my backyard. But one of my favorite things, because it's such a good big childhood sense memory, is that first course where you literally just walk the garden and kind of, we just pick yeah. stuff. You know, yeah. it's like your first course is walk out there. And if you see something that looks good and ripe, pick it and eat it. That was amazing because I grew up eating, you know, tomatoes right. off the vine and carrots straight out of the ground. And
so many great memories,
you know, and it was such a cool and also just to see where, and this little plot of land is where much of tonight's food is coming from. It's coming down the road, and that it's just such a great, I loved every part of the meal, but that was absolutely my favorite part.
Oh, right on.
So you're doing better.
Yeah. Yeah. Better. Every year I get a tiny, tiny bit better. And then something crazy happens. Like we get snow in March or like snow in May rather, which has totally happened.
The eternal yeah. curse of the Oklahoma gardener. You have to be emotionally uh-huh. sorted out in order to do this. You know?
Actually, that's really true. I mean, it's not for everybody for sure, but you're right about being emotionally sorted out because it pushes you to, you know, to the edge.
For real.
And I think,
oh man, sing
to totally agree. True.
Yeah. It's true.
I wanted to ask you guys, so our question of the week this week that we asked all of our readers, everybody online, was there a vegetable that you hated as a kid that now is like one of your favorites? And I figured you guys would have some of the best answers.
Oh, hell yeah. Long for me, because I hated vegetables when I was a kid. I mean, I green beans and corn and potatoes were about the only thing my mom could ever get me to eat. But now, I mean, I pretty much any vegetable is put in front of me, I'll eat. So things like eggplants, okra, beets for sure. I hated beets when I was a kid. I just would not even go there with yeah. them. Asparagus, all of those things are things that I love now, but hate as a kid.
Mm-hmm. My big thing was Brussels sprouts. I would gag, I mean, at the table. I mean, I was just like, I would make a scene, not on pride. I mean, these were legit gags. I mean, they were told, I was not faking it. Just the smell of Brussels sprouts. And it was like my dad's favorite vegetables. My mom made it all the time. And, you know, we were kind of the family where you don't put on your plate what you can't eat. And you know, and so, you know, I try to cut a Brussels sprout in half. And
Is there any vegetable that has had a bigger glow up than Brussels sprouts?
No way.
Total cultural redemption. It's awesome.
Giant U-turn in the culture. Everybody's like, oh, what do we have on the menu? Well, we've got Brussels sprouts three ways. And you're just like, that sounds amazing.
As a kid,
it's just like, okay, we're going to have Brussels sprouts tonight. So we've got to get you in the harness that opens your mouth up so you can shove it in there. There's no way you're going to take the bite yourself.
No, it's definitely the hip vegetable these days.
I think, too, because we were talking about this yesterday among our, among our little team here at Oklahoma Today, we were talking about how everyone here in this interview was raised in the era of the canned vegetable.
And
my family that had a big garden, there was a lot of canned and frozen, and it's just not. It's any wonder our generation grew up skeptical of all things green.
It's true.
I'm glad to know that people are rediscovering, and y'all are so much a part of that for Oklahomans. And I hope maybe even a bigger part going forward, because man, can y'all make some food. Oh my gosh. Oh,
thank you.
But can we talk about canned asparagus? Because that was my guilty pleasure when I was a kid.
That canned asparagus is the very thing that turned me against it, though. That is the most disgusting smell on the
asparagus. What a cool kid you were.
Vienna sausage, right?
I love Vienna sausage.
Me too.
I really do.
Ate tons of Vienna sausage.
Accompany with some canned, asparagus. You got a meal.
Skip these canned asparagus.
Yeah, last meal.
Yeah.
For the zombie apocalypse.
Eight-year-old me meal. That would be my last meal. What do you want for your last meal? I'm 8 years old. I'm like, I want Vienna sausage and canned asparagus.
See, that's a cool 8 year old. We would have been friends. We would have been friends in school. That's cool. Okay. That's cool. But if your experience, listeners, if your experience is with canned vegetables, then Living Kitchen probably needs to be a destination, and Farm Bar need to be destinations for you for sure. Because, oh my gosh, do they do some fresh things very well.
Yes.
Oh, thanks, man.
Seriously, it's one of the best meals I've ever had in my life. In my life. It was amazing. And I can't wait to come back.
Excellent. That's great to hear.
And for our listeners, if you would like to take part in one of these meals, we encourage you to head to livingkitchenfarm.com. And in the coming weeks and months, Linda and Lisa are going to be posting this year's dinners, and you can sign up there.
Is that correct, ladies?
Yeah. Uh-huh. We start back up in April, but the schedule of events will be available sometime next month. We get it mid-month. We may be able a little bit later than that this year. So it may be toward the end of February when we're posting. Yeah.
The Farm Bar always open?
It is open February.
Opening soon.
Yeah, it'll open up the first week of February.
That's exciting. Month off to fill our creative wells.
But absolutely, guys, thank you so much for coming on. We really, really love talking to you, and we hope you'll come on again. And maybe this summer you can help us figure out what to do with the meager pickings from our own gardens.
There you go. Run on. All right.
All right. Thanks,
guys. I have one cucumber. What do I do? It'd be great.
I tell you something, those ladies will make you never think about a vegetable in the same way again.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh, their place is so incredible.
Anyone who hasn't been out there really should check it out. I can't wait to see what the dinners they list next month are.
She said they're opening back up Living Kitchen in April, which is when my anniversary is. So I'm thinking maybe I book a repeat trip. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, now it is time for us to once again plumb the depths of TravelOK.com's calendar for our weekly podvents. First up this week is Carly.
Oh, I get to go first, huh? Mm-hmm. Well, good thing I have something cool. What if I told you there was a magical event where you can get all the fiber, iron, magnesium, copper, and manganese your body craves, improve your blood pressure, raise your good cholesterol, help protect your heart and your skin, and improve your brain function? well, there is such a place, and it's the Yukon Chocolate Festival. On February 5th, visitors can get all the healthy benefits of cocoa beans baked, molded, and melted into delicious concoctions from more than 20 vendors. Tickets are $15 each, with all proceeds benefiting the Mabel C. Fry Library, and one ticket gets you 10 samples. Call 405-350-8937 for more details, or just show up at the Dale Robertson Center in Yukon between 1 and 3 p.m. with an empty stomach.
Hot take, but chocolate is good.
Yeah.
How can you say something so brave and yet so controversial?
I don't know. I probably just endangered my life.
Megan, what's your event this week?
Now, I have some marathon trivia for all of you. So, the highest marathon occurs at an altitude of 17,000 feet near Mount Everest Base Camp.
Wow.
The lowest marathon is 200 feet below sea level in the Jordan Valley. A man versus horse marathon is held every year in Wales, and horses won for the first 24 years. The oldest annual marathon is the Boston Marathon, which began in 1897, and the biggest marathon ever was the 2016 New York Marathon that had more than 51,000 participants. And when Edison Pina was trapped underground in 2010 in a mine collapse in Chile, he ran 6 miles a day through the tunnels for 69 days and then completed the New York Marathon less than a month after he was rescued.
Whoa.
So the ancient trail trek in Sand Springs surely will be a more low-key experience than these others, and a beautiful one at that. On February 5th, participants will run 5, 10, and 15 Ks through 1,360 acres of wooded wonder at the Keystone Ancient Forest in Sand Springs. Not only will finishers receive medals, but they'll get a meal at the end, too. For more information, visit runsignup.com/race/OK/Sand Springs/ancient trail trek.
You want to read us that website one time?
runsignup.com/race/OK/Sand Springs/ancient trail trek. I could not find a
show. Wow. Okay.
Or just Google.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun, trek. Though.
Yeah, that's your best bet.
Running is fun, says me.
You can go to the Yukon Chocolate Festival, and then you can go run the marathon.
There you go, at the Keystone Ancient Forest in Sand Springs.
And also, you can just buy a t-shirt. They had an option to, you can run the race and not get a shirt, or you can run the race and get a shirt, or you can just get the shirt and not run the race at all.
That is such a great, like, what an American way to go. Like, it doesn't matter if I did it or not. I have the t-shirt.
Uh-huh.
Tell me I didn't. Yeah.
All right. Nate, what's your event this week?
Running, literally, running gets a bad rap, and it's quite enjoyable. You know, another thing that gets a bad rap and is quite enjoyable is classical music. In every TV show or movie, it's portrayed as the providence of the terminally boring. People think going to the symphony means dressing in awful and uncomfortable clothes and being bored for hours, listening to music that has no lyrics and is not interesting. But then I have proof to the contrary, because there's the Tulsa Symphony is staging a concert on Saturday, February 5th. That is going to be amazing. First of all, the name of it is just called Spitfire. And when's the last time the words spit or fire appeared anywhere in relation to classical music? This is already a sign it's going to be fun. This evening of lively, fast-paced classical tunes will include the title track, Spitfire, Prelude and Fugue, which is about as toe-tapping a classical piece as I've heard in a while. And if it sounds like a lively film score, that's because the piece was written to accompany the 1942 movie The First of the Few. Add to this a couple of other up-tempo soaring classical pieces like Dmitri Shostakovich's Symphony No. 9 and Samuel Barber's Knoxville Summer of 1915, and you have a cinematic, soaring, and never, ever boring evening of gorgeous music. Tickets start at $20 and no black tie evening wear is required. To purchase tickets or for more information, call 918-584-3645 or visit tulsasymphony.org.
If you wanted to make a date night out of it, you could go to Laffa.
There you go.
I like the symphony.
I do too.
I don't think classical music is boring.
I don't understand why people do. Like, I didn't know what this event was, so I got on Apple Music and I listened to a bunch of the pieces, and they're so fun. Like, they just, I don't know, they were really cool. That one by Shostakovich is really good. Y'all should listen to it.
I'm a huge fan of turning on the UCO classical station, mm-hmm. and just like,
which is heard worldwide.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's sometimes it's nice to have music that doesn't have lyrics.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. So that when people come home at the end of the day, they don't catch you in the kitchen singing into a potato masher.
Well, speaking of singing into a potato masher, if movies are to be believed, life ain't easy for princesses. If they aren't trading their voice for legs or agreeing to live with an anthropomorph in order to save their dad, they're letting rats design their dresses and taking ridiculously long naps. But man, can they sing, which is why there's Disney Princess, the concert. Enjoy a night with Broadway's Belle, Jasmine, Anastasia, and Nala as they celebrate all the Disney princesses in an evening of song, animation, and backstage stories in Enid's Stride Bank Center on February 1st. Audiences are encouraged to wear their own royal attire for this extremely princessy performance. Tickets are between $29 and $85, and you can visit stridebankcenter.com for more.
And I wanted to say, before anybody points this out, Anastasia is not technically a Disney princess, but 20th Century Fox was acquired, that they bought it.
She's
back.
A Don Bluth princess.
Uh-huh. Well, but Disney now owns her again. Yes. So no.
Disney owns the princess.
Property, I'm sorry, Disney. Not her.
I mean, technically, also Princess Leia could be in there.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But she's not a singing princess that we know of.
That we know of.
Yeah.
If that earworm of Let It Go is attacking your brain, then it means that the Oklahoma Today podcast is coming to a close. Join us again next week, or if you can't get enough, head to oklahomatoday.com and pick up our latest issue on newsstands right now. Send feedback to oktpod@travelok.com, and we will talk again next week. The Oklahoma Today podcast is a production of Oklahoma Today Magazine and the Oklahoma Tourism and Recreation Department. Your hosts are Oklahoma Today editors Nathan Gunner, Greg Elwell, Carly Ybarra, Megan Rossman, and Ben Lucian. Theme song, editing, and production held by Oklahoma Today's production manager, Bridget Sloan. For more information, visit oklahomatoday.com.
Goodbye.
Is an olive a vegetable?
Olives are fruit.
Oh. Okay.